seen Dougie Fresh?
Yes.
Have you ever seen a show with fellas on the mic with one-minute rhymes that don't come out right? They bite.
They never write.
That's not polite. Am I lying?
No, you're quite right.
Well, tonight, on this very mic, you're about to hear,
we swear, the best star rappers of the year. So,
cheerio,
yell,
scream bravo.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
This is 103.5 FM, WNHH, NewHavenIndependent.org, where you can listen to us on NewHavenIndependent.org, or you can stream live with us on WNHH through Facebook. You can go to TuneIn, and it's saved to SoundCloud. But nevertheless, I am here. My name is Michelle Turner, and I have the good fortune of hosting the show. We're going into our fourth year. So for me, this is a treat because for so long I've done radio, and radio has kind of done me in. But I am pleased to be here, and I'm pleased to still be able to bring information to the public, because that's what this is all about. This is community radio. It's 103.5 FM, and this is the show. My guest today is someone who is not a stranger to WNHH. In fact, she has a show, correct?
Mm-hmm. But it's not the show.
It's not the show. And we'll explain what the name of it is in a moment. But we were talking before the mics and the cameras flipped on. And as it turns out, this is a year anniversary since she's been on this show.
Yes.
So Keeper Bolden, welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Thanks for having me again.
So the last time you were here, mm-hmm. Women Grow was a brand new movement in Connecticut.
Yes.
And Keeper deals with and in, I don't want to say the word deal, but in the cannabis industry. And she is really focused on cannabis health. And her business is called Canna Health.
Yes.
But talk about Women Grow for a minute. How's okay. that doing? What is Women Grow doing in Connecticut?
Okay. So thanks again for having me.
Sure.
And yeah, it's been a year. I started with Women Grow. That was my first business uh-huh. in cannabis. And uh-huh. Women Grow is a professional networking organization that encourages, supports, promotes women as they become entrepreneurs in the cannabis space.
Mm-hmm.
And they do this by having monthly networking events all over the country, simultaneously the first Thursday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in about 33 cities and a couple of countries.
Wow, I didn't know it got
and international.
How long have they been around now?
They were established in 2014.
Okay, so yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah. They really have grown exponentially over the years. Mm-hmm. And this last year was a time of great transition. So we have new leadership and mm-hmm. a lot of new models and modalities that are being implemented to kind of help us in our roles as market leaders.
Okay.
But some exciting things are coming. You know, we're looking at potentially having a nonprofit leg and kind of
wow.
really being able to give back to the community
uh-huh.
because Women Grow is a for-profit entity. But a lot of people, you know, take a little issue with that. But we do provide monthly quality programming. You know,
so in other words, the organization is beginning to make a little money.
Well, I think we've always, you know, were revenue building,
mm-hmm.
But what has changed now is that I think the more, first of all, with new leadership, we've had a better understanding of what the cannabis community really means.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just about business, although business is very, very important. Like
right.
I am a businesswoman. I right. have several businesses. I pray to God that they'll make me millions one day real soon. You know, however, I also realize that to be in this industry, I have to be an advocate.
Yeah.
Like I have to be a proponent for safe use, for access, for equality and fairness in businesses and, mm-hmm. and the way the laws are written and things of that nature. And so I think that Women Grow has taken on that stance a little more. And so instead of just focusing on the networking aspect, which mm-hmm. is really important because after education, building my network is what has helped me grow so quickly in this industry. Because again, yeah. I've only been in this industry for a year, and I've already, you know, accomplished some things that it would take several years for many people to do.
And talk about what those are.
So definitely obtaining the license and owning the license for Women Grow in Connecticut was mm-hmm. a huge step.
Yeah.
Connecticut Women Grow in general in the past have been there were a lot of non-colored faces.
Yeah.
And so they had begun to open up the market a little bit, and mm-hmm. I was like one of the first amongst many, but they were planted throughout the country. But at the same time, a lot of new women of color were brought mm-hmm. to take the lead. And so I was fortunate to have made some interactions with the New York chapter
uh-huh.
and ended up meeting the CEO. It was a great kind of story. And then I got the license for Connecticut. So, you know, to be a Black girl from New Haven,
right.
you know, and to be associated with Women Grow, which is known nationally, mm-hmm. you know, was just almost unheard of. And then, you know, I've spoken in several states, you know, usually on panels either related to healthcare,
mm-hmm.
Being that my background is as a registered nurse. And now I consider myself a cannabis nurse.
Uh-huh.
So I've gone across the country speaking at different conferences and events just about the importance of utilizing cannabis as medicine and mm-hmm. that it's accessible to all people. And no longer criminalized. And so that's the other end of things that I've spoken across the country about, you know, just making this a fair and equitable industry mm-hmm. and that there's diversity in leadership and mm-hmm. ownership and that we have access for everyone again, you know, in the business side. So that's been pretty amazing. I've also, and I know we're going to probably go into it a little deeper later, but,
yeah.
you know, pretty early on in my cannabis career, I was recruited to be on a steering committee for a drug rehab center that utilizes cannabis to get people off of opioids
uh-huh.
To help them work through the withdrawal symptoms. And so I am the co-chief nursing officer for this committee. Hmm. And it's based in Huerfano County, Colorado, which had the highest number of opioid overdoses mm-hmm. in the state of Colorado. Mm-hmm. And so they really wanted to implement a program. So we've been working to put that in motion there. And then my hope would be to bring that model back to Connecticut
mm-hmm.
so that we're actually having a hearing June 25th with the Board of Physicians to add opioid use as one of the diagnoses for which people could obtain their medical marijuana cards.
Okay.
So, you know, I've been able to be instrumental in seeing that work in a legal state
yeah.
and how it works. So I'll be able to bring that back here. So again, something I never thought, you know, I would have imagined. And then, you know, just really kind of doing interviews, being on television, just things that I never, you know, I didn't
thought
aspire
about.
To, or,
right.
you know, I didn't really want to do. But I think the most important thing to me is really finding an area of focus for my advocacy
mm-hmm.
and being able to begin a conversation to heal my community. Because people look at me like I'm crazy half the time, but I love New Haven. You know, I love the people. I love uh-huh. my community. And we are suffering as people. And part of it is that we have been residents in a war zone.
Right.
You know, the war on drugs was really a war on people. It affected people's lives in many, mm-hmm. many ways. You know, the trauma of slavery has just reinvented itself,
mm-hmm.
you know, through mass incarceration and the onslaught of drugs and alcohol into our communities. And so, you know, realizing that this is what has happened to my community and why
yeah.
we act the way we act and why there are things that go on in our community that do, you know, really kind of bringing that to light and talking about post-traumatic stress disorder, talking mm-hmm. about complex urban traumas, you know, really studying that and finding ways to heal and help my community. So it's just been such a year of growth and maturity uh-huh. and of insight and, you know, of sacrifice. I've I've always been a really hard worker, mm-hmm. you know, as a nurse, and made good, great money, you know, but really kind of stepped away from that to be able to bring this knowledge to my community. Yeah, because I mean, I could have went to New York and worked in cannabis, or gone to Colorado and worked in cannabis and gotten myself a pretty nice check, more than likely. But my goal was to bring the information to this town that I love, so that we all could partake in the benefits.
So I'm gonna roll it back a little bit.
Okay.
Dial it back.
Mm-hmm.
Women grow. Mm-hmm. When you first came on,
yes,
you talked to me about how, and it's looking at it from that advocacy standpoint that you just spoke so eloquently about. When you started to talk about how decriminalization was something that would benefit African Americans,
mm-hmm.
specifically in New Haven, because of the history that we've had with the war on drugs in this city.
Right.
Have you made any progress in the African American community as far as going out and talking to people about mm-hmm. what you're trying to do and how you're using cannabis, not only as a business, mm-hmm. but to heal?
So
that answer is
I'm trying to share this. I'm sorry, I got made noise, but I was trying to share it on my page. I'm sorry,
that's all right.
But it's been interesting. So I definitely have a following to an extent of people who kind of listen and come to events and maybe partake in events at times.
Hey, but Norma Reyes. Sorry. Gotta shout Norma out. How you doing, Norma?
Well, while you do that, I'll go share it then.
Okay.
But, you know, I really have not had, I thought more, because so when I really started studying cannabis and started going to events and things of that nature, like, I was on it. Like, I didn't care. I would call out of work. I would take a day off. You know, I would drive. Mm-hmm. I would pay to go or whatever. And so I knew that people from my, you know, community probably wouldn't do all that I would do, because I could be a little extra sometimes. But I felt like that if I brought it here,
mm-hmm.
they would come.
If you bring it, they would come.
I thought that was going to be the case, but it really didn't quite happen like that. You know, it still is a lot of pulling and prodding, mm-hmm. and I feel like if I could do things a little differently, I would have just probably quietly laid the foundation.
And then approached?
Yes, because one thing about our community, we don't believe it till we see it, till it's happening, you know, and unfortunately, a lot of times we don't respect the process or have patience for the process, and
we're not willing to
sacrifice for the process,
yeah.
you know, and so I think because of the fact that, you know, cannabis is not legal, so, you know, in our state for recreational adult use, so and our medical program is very limiting because it's only open basically for pharmacists and pharmacy techs.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, but go ahead, finish.
So I think because of the fact that it hasn't really materialized mm-hmm. in the way in which, you know, I have been professing it will be, I think that's caused people to not necessarily buy into it fully.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do have people, I own Canna Health, we are a cannabis-based health and wellness center, mm-hmm. and I do medical marijuana evaluations and get people certified to become medical marijuana patients in the state.
Okay.
And I do, now that they are buying into. Everybody wants their medical marijuana card, and unfortunately, fortunately, in this situation, one of the diagnoses that we're able to certify people for their medical marijuana card is post-traumatic stress disorder. Uh-huh. And 9 times out of 10, especially if you're black, brown, from the inner city, you know, you have PTSD.
It's a part of it.
You've had some traumatic event, at least one. But again, in our community, is more complex.
Mm-hmm.
There's several traumas. But anyway, because of that, like, people definitely are supporting. They're sharing that information, you know. And I was just having this conversation with Markeisha out there a little bit about,
hey, you know, Markeisha,
the fact that that I wonder sometimes, you know, like what I have envisioned, and it's just my little vision. I mean, and it's a humble vision. It's not like I'm not saying like I'm gonna change New Haven, like not like that, but from the perspective of, you know, how great I know it could be for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, this is our one opportunity, in my opinion. We'll never be at the stage of the end of cannabis prohibition, mm-hmm. where businesses and opportunities will open up. We'll never be here again. You know, so I just feel like if we're able to engage people, we'd be successful. But they can't be engaged if they're not engageable because of trauma,
right?
Because of,
and,
you know,
and possibly because of the experience of it just not being fully legal,
right? Well, I mean, and I do get that, and I do think there is some apprehension,
mm-hmm.
you know, to, especially because I'm out there with it, like, right. you know, whatever. So I'm like, come on with me. You know, people are like, hey, I got a real job, girl. Like, I can't be risking that or whatever. But I think maybe that there is a little element of that. But mm-hmm. I just feel like we don't, I just want us to be whole.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. See, sidebar for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
How does one qualify to get a medical marijuana card?
Okay. So the state of Connecticut has a medical program. If you're mm-hmm. 18 years or older, there are 22 diagnoses that are acceptable to obtain your, to be certified for your medical marijuana card. They range from, I'll try to list as many of them as I can.
Okay.
All
right.
For our community, sickle cell. Cancer, Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, PTSD,
mm-hmm.
And then there's a bunch that are very specific, like you have to have spinal cord damage with neurological
mm-hmm.
problems.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have, and I know I'm missing probably some really, but the great ones we don't have. So like pain.
Yeah.
Should be one of the diagnoses that's acceptable. And again, we're considering now, as on Monday, I'm going up to a hearing to testify for the benefit of having opioid addiction as one of the diagnoses.
Uh-huh.
But there are, you know, there's a decent number of diagnoses, but they're very specific. So the general way is through PTSD.
Okay. And then once you get your diagnoses, say I'm diagnosed with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
What's the next step?
You can do that at Canna Health.
Okay. So what's the next step? Do I come into you and say, this is what I have? Here's my doctor's referral mm-hmm. or?
So if you have one of the medical diagnoses, mm-hmm. you just need to bring something that states that you have the diagnoses either from your primary care physician or from your specialist.
Okay.
If you're coming to me without a post-traumatic stress disorder diagnosis previously,
mm-hmm.
then we do a screening in my office.
Okay.
And so it's a nationally used and recognized and respected screening on the PCL-5.
Mm-hmm.
It's multiple choice for 2/3 of it. And then there is...
I have to take this test? I have to take a physical test?
It's not a test. It's more like an assessment.
Okay.
So you answer questions, and like the first question is, have you ever been in a natural disaster?
Ooh, okay.
And it goes all the way to, have you ever witnessed a homicide?
Okay.
And have you ever had severe human suffering?
Mm-hmm.
So anybody who's ever been to prison, they've had severe human suffering.
Okay.
You know, so things of that nature. And then the second page, there is a place where you have to write a narrative, but it's a very short one line narrative about the worst experience you've ever had. But we're not callous about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're actually meeting with an advanced practice registered nurse. I'm a nurse, so I prefer to work with nurses.
Uh-huh.
So I hire APRNs.
When you say that, mm-hmm. do you have to have a psychiatrist or a psychologist on board, or are you as registered RNs able to provide that where it's accepted?
So the advanced practice registered nurses uh-huh. have a higher level of a degree than I do as a registered nurse.
Okay.
So this master's doctorate level.
Okay.
But in addition to that, I have a psychiatrically trained advanced practice registered nurse who is amazing. Her name is Delise Robertson. She's a Black woman. She is of Jamaican descent.
Mm-hmm.
She is an instructor at Yale School of Nursing, we got some of the best people. Mm-hmm. And so she does the PTSD diagnoses, and she also oversees the medical APRN's notes.
Yeah.
If she sees a PTSD person and they kind of decide if that person's going to be diagnosed. But you do the screening, we diagnose you, and then we certify you.
Okay.
So if you bring in your medical records, we act as like the second physician or mm-hmm. Clinician to say
okay.
you can get your
you're the second opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then if you have PTSD, but people also go to a psychologist or they mm-hmm. have those records. We don't re-traumatize people
right.
by making them relive that. If you have something that says you're previously diagnosed with PTSD and you're still able to verbalize symptoms, we
yeah.
will still certify you.
Okay, so how long does it take for you to get said card?
So once you're diagnosed and or certified,
mm-hmm.
You have to then register with the state of Connecticut to be a part of the program. That you can do immediately after your certification because once we put you in the system as certified,
mm-hmm.
an email is generated to you. You can load your account, upload, you know, proof of ID, proof of residency, and take a headshot of yourself,
mm-hmm.
pay $100, and that's your registration to the state. Once you have registered with the state, I tell everybody it's about a 4 to 6 week wait.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that could vary. Lately, they've been good. They've been more on a 3 week kind of cycle, which I was kind of surprised because they just did a round of dispensary applications.
Okay.
And they got 70 of them. So I was like, oh God, it's going to take forever.
It's going to take forever.
But they're
right.
staying on top of it. So you wait your 4 to 6 weeks. Somewhere in between there, you'll receive a temporary license by
mm-hmm.
way of email.
Mm-hmm.
You print it out or bring it with you to the dispensary. They'll print it out for you and you can begin purchasing
and you're all
your
set.
Items. Once, but it's just not that simple. Once you do go to the dispensary, especially for my new users, like
mm-hmm.
I've been certifying a lot of people 65 and older
mm-hmm.
who either have never used or used, you know, when
right.
they were teenagers.
While they were, and so it's different from
totally
what
different.
They were possibly smoking in the 70s or the
60s. Somebody said, what, Mexicali Gold or something, y'all, Acapulco Yellow or something. Some stuff that I don't even know.
Before your time,
yes.
obviously, right?
But before both our times, I'm sure. But so what happens after you when you get that email and you go on
mm-hmm.
your first outing to the dispensary, you meet with the pharmacist, and they kind of go over what your symptoms are, how you're trying to manage them, and then they make suggestions on strains that they think would work to manage symptoms.
To manage your pain or
mm-hmm.
whatever it is.
In addition, I tell all my first timers to call me when they get their card.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of go over some strains that I think would work. And then they take that to the pharmacist and the pharmacist can then kind of narrow
it down together.
Based on what's available, too. So you'll have support afterwards.
So you've been going to the state capitol and lobbying.
Yes.
To make marijuana legal in this state.
Yes.
How's that been for you? How's that going?
So I think this session we got further than we've ever gotten with
mm-hmm.
the cannabis legalization talk because it's always been talk so far. But you know, for the first time ever, the House Appropriations Committee voted to legalize cannabis and for that to be presented to the House and the Senate floor.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the Democrats decided that they didn't have enough votes and they didn't want to push it forward.
Really?
Because they didn't want to lose, essentially. so they never voted on
politics.
It in the House and the Senate at all. But it's been interesting when I'm going up to advocate, and you know, there are a lot of different nuances. Like, for instance, we want grow rights here in the state, and we want that to be a part of our legalization.
Yeah, talk a little bit. Give me three things that you're presenting to the legislature that you want, that you feel are the capstone to what you're trying to do.
Okay, so first and foremost is a fair and equitable industry.
Now, when you say that, what does that mean, fair and equitable?
So utilizing models like from other cities and states, i.e. Oakland, definitely Massachusetts. Massachusetts is our cannabis big sister in so many ways. Okay. Like, they're really like laying down a foundation for this fair and equitable industry, which just means that people, no matter what your financial background, what your pedigree is, should have access to this industry, but especially people who were either incarcerated, criminalized, or still dealing with the repercussions of, you know, their interactions with the law and cannabis in some way, shape, or form. And then people who are from communities that were over policed, that were that drugs and alcohol and guns and were placed in the community to help us extinguish each other. You know, these kind of things that have been done, and that is being, you know, we can now look at video.
Right. And see of what's, you know, really going on.
Of here Nixon's, you know, when President Nixon was in office, and how he said, you know, we're going to throw the hippies and the blacks in jail for cannabis,
for the use,
for marijuana. And so that's how we can, you know, squash all of this noise. You know, they didn't want people protesting the war at the time, and the Black Panthers.
Right.
Were
the Weathermen, all of those folks.
Exactly. So what like Massachusetts has done is that, like, if you are from a community that was affected by the war on drugs, and they're pretty specific, but like, those people got first preference
for
licensure applications, because Mass is going legal as of July 2018.
Okay.
And so they had their first round of license just for people from those communities, just for people of color, just for people who were from disproportionate, you know, areas. So what they are doing is excellent. Oakland has a similar program where, if you're from Oakland, but if you have a criminal conviction for cannabis, you get preference.
Wow.
Yeah. So things of that nature make it fair and equitable. Also making licensing accessible, you know, for people to be able to afford the licenses. So, you know, we have places and cities where if somebody wants to open a dispensary, they have to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars for an application.
Yeah.
And then in places like Oakland, like Mass, they've lowered the cost if you're in a certain income guideline. Within a certain income guideline, you get, you know, a lesser charge that a person who is coming with $1 million, you know, company behind them would have. So That's kind of like evening out the score, but it's just about evening it. You know, you criminalize us, you throw us in jail, you know, you make our communities horrible places to live. And then you decide you want to make cannabis legal, and millionaires are just making the money. That's not the way it should be.
Yeah.
You know, if you use this against us, help us get, you know, it's like, what do they say?
It's almost a form of reparations.
It is absolutely a form of reparations. And people don't like Cynthia Nixon. She had made this statement in New York, and people got so upset. Like, how dare she? I mean, come on. We've been talking about this at least for the past year or two that I've been involved in cannabis, about the fact that this is what, you know, we're never going to get 40 acres and a mule.
Right.
And who knows how to take care of a mule or 40 acres, really? You know, I don't even want no mule. Just let me be able to fill out.
I think it's a metaphor, Kebra.
No, it really was supposed to be 40.
Yeah, it was after emancipation. It was.
Yeah, but
we have moved way beyond that.
Yes, but what I'm saying is, like, you know, I think people would accept it more if they were really offering us 40 acres in the field and be like, oh, we've heard this before,
yeah,
you know, whatever. But no, when you think about cannabis, you should be thinking, this is a way to repair my community. Mm-hmm. Again, I think maybe from the beginning when I started talking, and I'm sure I even said this last year, I want to be rich. I want to make money. Do not doubt that for a second. I'm going to be riding around New Haven with a fur coat, a bikini, on a horse truck, drawing carriage, something crazy. But I want to repair my community. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to give back. I want to be able to restore or create a Q house. You know,
right.
I want New Hallville to be revitalized to what it once was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I have a special love for New Hallville. I was born and raised there. I was raised across town. But, you know, it's just something that you can physically see the pain in a community.
Yeah.
You know, that daggone gun range still shooting off shots and our babies are trying to learn.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that, like, it's just like, okay, we cannot allow this anymore. And what can I do? How can I do? I can't do anything
if
I
don't
have money.
It? Yeah.
You know, so I have to figure out a way to make enough money, show my people how to make enough money so that we can really exact change in these communities. Because money will get them out of here.
Yeah, well, money will make changes for sure.
Yes.
So the third thing.
Oh, so what did I say?
You said fair and equitable. Then you talked about wealth.
Okay, wealth building.
Yes.
No, growing, I think.
Okay.
So we want a fair and equitable industry. We want grow rights is another thing that people are talking about a lot. So people, you know, I always use this example. Cannabis really touches on so many areas of life.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's not, people are like, ah, you just love weed, you know, whatever. It's not that, though. It really is true. You know, because imagine, like, your child is sick. She has epilepsy. You've tried every single medication the doctors send your way. It doesn't stop the seizures, but now your child is doped up all day. This is just not quality of life that you're seeing your child have. You find you research, you find a strain, you decide to grow it for your child.
Mm.
You know, you're in there, you're placing the soil, you're placing the seeds, you're watering this thing. And then it grows and comes to full fruition and you're able to medicate your child and watch the seizures go away. Do you know how many lessons you've learned in that time?
Yes. Right.
Like, you've learned to be your child's first and best advocate. You've learned to take responsibility for your child's care. You're providing and making medicine. You're growing something from a plant. You know, so you have to be patient. You have to be consistent. You know, these are all things that we lack in our community. Growing cannabis. Oh, and then our poor, you know, veterans who have, like, that's so therapeutic for them.
Right.
You know.
Right. It helps them.
Yeah. So grow rights are very useful, and they would touch so many areas of lives, and they would also help people save money. Because if you go through the process of getting your medical marijuana card and all that stuff, you know, you still have to pay for this.
Right.
So you pay to be seen by me at Canna Health. Costs you $200. You pay $100 to the state. And then you have to go buy your medicine.
And it's expensive.
It's expensive.
It's costly.
So if you're allowed to grow 4, 5, 6, 7 plants for yourself, like especially like a cancer patient, they need like 10 milligrams. They need like 10 ounces a month to really deal with pain. They can't afford that.
Okay, so if, in fact, you had a real cannabis market, would pricing drop? Because now you're sort of like leveling the playing field, so to speak. It's not something that's rare, almost like tobacco farms. Mm-hmm. If cannabis were to be grown in the same way, you know, there are tobacco fields all over the South.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say if we had cannabis fields all
and
over
hemp.
The Northeast
and
hemp, would that make pricing cheaper?
I would hope so. I mean, but I would hope it would even itself out. Like we're creating an industry where, like, our farming community has been suffering. Like, they're, you know, so this would help revitalize that community. I think it all equals out. You know, there will be taxation at a higher rate.
Yeah.
And we're okay with that. Like almost every cannabis advocate is like, all right, tax us, you know, tax us to an extent. Don't, because if taxes are way too high, then it'll just encourage the black market to continue.
Right.
But we're willing to pay taxes, and then medical patients shouldn't have to pay as much in taxes.
Yeah.
So that would kind of help to even out. So we charge medical patients a little less, recreational people a little more, so that businesses could continue to thrive. And there's, you know, there's equity there as well.
So you're moving.
Yeah.
You've grown.
Yes.
So are we looking at a staff? Are we looking at more office space? What's going on with Canna Health?
So actually, it's some exciting things going on. I can't even really talk about 100% yet, but I can tell you that.
Give us a general overview.
Yeah. So we had the first ever cannabis conference in the state of Connecticut.
Wow.
And that I worked with my team at Cannabis Consultants, Joe LaChance and Louis Vega at putting it together, and Eve Santana with High Beautiful. We worked in partnership.
Okay.
We had over 200 attendees. It was at the Omni Hotel. It was great. And so that has really expanded our market and our business and gotten more people interested. And so I was able to move Canna Health. We're actually moving to downtown New Haven.
Nice.
We're going to be at 178 Temple Street. The office is currently under reconstruction right now. And we're going to have a grand reopening July 5th. So that'll be our grand reopening day. So that's exciting. I'm excited about that. You know, the fact that I don't have parking kind of, you know,
yeah,
but I'm willing
a little
to work
bit of a
with
challenge.
People. Like we could do a little, you know, I'm trying to work out a plan that'll work for my patients to be able to park downtown. So I'm working on something. And then next week on June 28th, we're having an event at New Haven City Hall in the atrium. It's called Unacknowledged Tears, a conversation about PTSD and complex urban traumas. And I've invited people from New Haven, and not people voices that you normally hear, just regular people who have experienced traumas on so many different levels. To come out and just talk about these traumas. But we're not just stopping there, because even that is therapeutic.
Right.
You know, sometimes getting it out, putting a, you know, actually saying, wow, I've been a trauma victim. You know, this is why I'm so irritable. This is why, you know, my patience is this, you know, much. But in addition to the people we've invited to come and share their stories, we've invited four therapists who are going to be on site with immediate intervention.
Okay.
So things that people can take away and leave with immediately, as well as their information, because I believe everybody needs therapy. just to kind of like get to the core.
Right.
We're dysfunctional. Something ain't right.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, let's just get to the core. So we're having this, and I think it's really going to be the beginning of healing. You know, for our community, Mayor Harp is going to give us opening remarks.
And what's the date again?
June 28th.
Okay. Send me something so I can read it.
Okay. It's from 6 to 8 p.m.
Okay.
And let's see what else. you know, just some partnerships that are evolving and developing, and that you're going to be able to, I think maybe, it'll engage some more people because I have a couple more bells and whistles and bright, shiny things.
Oh, low-hanging fruit.
Yes.
So, last but not least.
Yes.
I've been hearing the past few days about how cannabis can help opioid use.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of in the respect that it can basically help wean somebody off an opioid. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Again, like I'm on the steering committee in Colorado, and this is exactly what we do. But essentially, when if someone is on if someone has become addicted to opioids or heroin or, you know, all those Percocet, all that stuff.
Opioid-based
products. The way they're treated now is they are placed on methadone, which mm-hmm. most often is lifelong mm-hmm. use, mm-hmm. Or Suboxone, which is a shorter use, but it's usually in conjunction with methadone.
Okay.
So they're just creating a new habit.
Okay.
Essentially, that is damaging your kidneys, your liver, your mind, everything. And it really causes dysfunctional people. I mean, we walk around the city of New Haven all the time. The people who look the most zombie-ish mm-hmm. are the ones who have just left the methadone clinic because, you know, other cities bust these people into our city for methadone, leave them here all day, and then they come back and pick them up at 5 or 6 o'clock. Yeah, so they're not, you know, loitering in their communities. They're loitering in ours. So what we have found is that cannabis is effective because basically the reason why they put someone on another addictive drug, mm-hmm. essentially, is because of the withdrawal. The withdrawal symptoms are so severe, and it makes it hard for people because people just want to feel better, so they go back to the drug.
So how does marijuana help?
So cannabis, it manages those symptoms. So basically, you would take large doses of cannabis oils, of cannabis flowers, edibles, whatever, and essentially sleep or through withdrawal. You wake up to eat, get another dab, you know, smoke another J, you know,
and
or
you're
take
right
another
back.
Tincture, yeah. and you're right back to so it masks those symptoms. The nausea and vomiting is little to none. You're able to sleep, without nightmares, which is, you know, one of the big problems as well. You know, it deals with the pain because there is physical pain associated to the withdrawal. And so, you know, and it also relaxes the mind. So it helps with anxiety and the stress and, you know, the whole process of withdrawal.
So do you see this as, because everybody says, well, is this real science?
Oh, it's real science.
And that's my question to you. As a health professional, mm-hmm. as a trained, learned, practicing mm-hmm. health professional, mm-hmm. is this real medicine?
Oh, yeah. And I don't even have to, like, make up anything. The United States of America owns a patent number 6630507, which says that the cannabinoids, specifically CBD, is an anti-inflammatory and a neuroprotector. So the United States considers it medicine.
So now, if I'm going through withdrawal, mm-hmm. you mentioned several ways that I can take the medicine. Mm-hmm. Is there a liquid form? I know there's something mm-hmm. you can, an edible, right? Mm-hmm.
So you can transfer cannabis into a carrier oil, like mm-hmm. butter. That's how people make brownies or, you know, things of that nature because I have this cool little decarboxylator made by this amazing woman from Massachusetts, mm-hmm. Chanel Lindsay, who's a lawyer and an advocate. And she's the one of two, her and Shalene Tidal, working to get those Massachusetts laws written right. So shout out to them. But anyway, mm-hmm. Chanel makes this decarboxylator. You stick the bud in there and you set it and forget it. Then you know, add the carrier oil and you go and make
and
your
that's
edibles.
It.
Yep. But then they also have tincture forms, which also could be made through decarboxylation, mm-hmm. but you could also buy them at the dispensary. Tinctures. You take a little dropper, shoot it in your tea in the morning, you're medicated for the day. And let's see, so there's edibles, tinctures, salves, and lotions that you could directly apply.
Just run onto the skin, rub mm-hmm. onto the skin.
Yep. And it doesn't, because of the blood-brain barrier, it doesn't cross over to your brain so you don't get that high. Mm-hmm. So that's a great entryway, like for my little old ladies who are like, I don't know about that weed. I'm like, all right, well, mama, let me rub this on your knee.
And see how that
and
feels.
And then they're like, I want some more of that weed, you know, whatever. But that's a nice little entryway without the high. Because, you know, a lot of people don't want that. Now, I am a firm believer in THC. Mm-hmm. I think that, and not I think, it's known that the cannabinoids work best when they're all together.
Okay.
So if you extract just CBD only, yeah, you'll get the inflammation, anti-inflammatory properties. You'll get, you know, the anti-ischemia properties. You'll get lower blood pressure. You'll get better diabetic numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But it'll be even better if you had a little THC, because it allows your body to relax and your brain to relax, and the CBD does the body work. You know, so THC works on your brain. CBD and the other cannabinoids work throughout the body. Like, we have a whole system. Like we could actually spend. So it's very scientific, very medical. They have determined a whole. So like how we have the respiratory system, the cardiovascular system. There's an endocannabinoid system that is basically endogenous cannabinoids, as opposed to exogenous cannabinoids. Like, you know, actually consuming cannabis, but they work together, lock in key, and that kind of keeps your body in homeostasis. That's why cannabis is so effective against disease.
All right. So with the last few minutes that we have, tell folks why this is beneficial.
Okay.
If you can, in 2 minutes.
I can. It's beneficial because it can help heal a community and make it whole. Heal physical symptoms, disease, properties. It can heal communities by creating an industry and roads to entrepreneurship and roads to obtaining financial assistance and to put back into your community. It can heal because it begins conversations. And then the social aspect of consumption, I think, is really important. So that was the third thing that I'm up at the Capitol that is really in the forefront of my mind, is that when we do implement a legal program, that there are areas for social consumption.
Okay.
So we should be able to have cannabis lounges similar to cigar bars and, you know, be able or a regular bar instead of, you know, we just have cannabis. So I think social consumption is very important because that is also community building as well.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah, cannabis touches almost every aspect of life. You know, we're going to right wrongs with it. We're going to be able to recreate communities. We're able to heal communities, and we're able to start conversations that we've never been able to have before.
All right. So with that, you have heard from the owner and founder of Canna Help, Kira Bolden, who is a New Haven native and an RN. She is also part of Women Grow. How many chapters in Connecticut?
Just one.
Just one. Just and it's here.
But there are in surrounding towns, like if you want to go check out some other ones, which is fine by me, there's New York.
Okay.
And there's New York and New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
And
Massachusetts.
So my mentor from Women Grow, her name is Beth Waterfall. She left Women Grow and started an organization called Elevate New England, which I'm one of the founding members as well.
Okay.
So Elevate New England is like Women Grow on steroids. Like they not only do networking events, but they help people with licensure.
Yeah.
They really have a sense of community. They bring these great events every month. So it's a cool organization. Shout out to Elevate New England. Love them. Oh, and then I'm, you know, Minorities for Medical Marijuana.
Okay.
That's also, I'm the New England Regional Director. And I don't even know how I'm talking about them last. They are really working across the country. So we have several chapters in almost every major city right now, and we're working on the legislative end of things. So like making sure those laws are written correctly. Minority Cannabis Business Association is another organization that I'm a member of, and they've written a mock bill that basically has all of the language that we want to see put forth in most communities, of course, with different little, you know, New Haven's different
right,
from Hartford,
right.
You know, so on and so forth. So we have to tailor it. But, you know, they've definitely laid the foundation and the framework for us.
All right. Thank you, Kira, for coming on.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you. I appreciate the knowledge. Now, when you get to another year, you have to come back.
I will be back. Hopefully, I'll be back before. We gonna work a 6 month interval all right, from here on out.
That's good. And give a shout out to the show that you're on once a week.
Oh, okay, so on Mondays from 1 to 2, it's Cannabis Corner. It's myself, Joe the Weed Guy, and Uncle Lou, and we talk about all things cannabis. Next Monday, though, it's a PTSD and Urban Complex Trauma conversation, and we're going to be, that's what we're focusing on and getting ready for the event at City Hall.
Thank you, Keebra. Keebra Bolden is, again, the owner of Canada Health.
Yes.
Which is moving to downtown New Haven.
Yes.
And she's a registered nurse, has been a practitioner in the nursing field forever.
Yeah.
And it's part of Women Grow. So with that, I hope you got some information. I'm Michelle Turner. By the way, you're listening to WNHHLP 103.5 FM, streaming live from downtown New Haven in the studios on Elm Street. You can tune in. You can go to WNHH.org. You can go to Facebook at WNHH's page, or you can go to SoundCloud or NewHavenIndependent.org. Any of those. 103.5 FM LP. This is WNHH. I'm Michelle Turner, and this has been the show.
Yes!
Have you ever seen a show with fellas on the mic with 1 minute rhymes that don't come out right? They bite.
They never write.
That's not polite. Am I lying?
No, you're quite right.
Well, tonight, on this very mic, you're about to hear,
we swear, the best star rappers of the year. So,
cheerio,
yell,
scream bravo.
Also, if you didn't know,